You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 15 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking at the Reds involved in international football over the weekend. We'll be answering a number of your questions from Facebook and via the emails too. And we'll be joined by an Everton fan to preview this weekend's encounter with the Toffees.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 15 of the RedCafe.net podcast. It's me, Stephen Darwin, as always, and I'm joined by Dov and Dan. How are we, guys?
Not bad. How you doing, Steve?
Yeah, I'm all good. You had a good weekend?
Yeah, it's been good. I'm just looking forward to hearing the big man talk again.
How are we, Dan?
I'm fine, thanks, yeah. Skype's been really annoying with me, which is really starting to get on my wick, but no, I'm fine.
The big man has spoken. Skype, better be listening.
Well, it's a bit of a weird show this week. So obviously, without United playing over the last week, it's been international week, of course, so... We'll discuss the international fixtures and the various United players that have been involved in them. And we'll kick off with England against Brazil, 1-0 defeat for England, and both Ben Foster and Wes Brown heavily involved. Dan, Foster, he come out, didn't he, and he brought down, was it Neymar, and he should have been sent off, really, but he wasn't. Will that do his confidence any good, that sort of thing? I mean, he admitted after the game that he was lucky to have stayed on the pitch. But other than that, he had a pretty decent game, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he played well. I mean, I think it's a bit harsh to blame him for the penalty. Wes Brown, what he was doing, I have no idea. You could see it happening as well as soon as the ball was in the air. They were too close together. And Brown, why he didn't just head it back, I have no idea. But you know, he tried to be clever, and it didn't really come off for him, did it? But no, I think that he's come out in the press as well, hasn't he, lately, saying about his position at United and stuff. But I think he should start, you know, performing a bit better before he comes out, having a bit of a moan. But no, his performance for England was all right. The saves he had to made, he made very well. He held a few of them as well. So the funny thing about Foster, he seems to like, he's been really confident in front of the press and stuff. But when he gets on a pitch, he doesn't seem to sort of convey that confidence, which is strange, really. But moving on to Wes Brown, I thought people have been a bit harsh with him. But I mean, Neymar, I didn't realise how quick he was, because Wes Brown's not exactly slow, and he went past him easily a few times. Really, Wes Brown's not played a lot of games, has he?
No. And what about the performance of Wayne Rooney, Dan? Were you impressed with that? He obviously got the captain's armband and he sort of excelled in that position. But you expect that from Rooney. He's that sort of character, isn't he?
He had a bunch of average players around him, to be fair. I mean, like, you know, Jermaine Genus in centre midfield for an England first team. I don't understand. Why was Carrick not playing? Michael Carrick's the type of a game, you know, type of player that's suited for that game. You know, perfect. You know, keep hold of the ball, pass it around a bit. But Jermaine Genus, not a chance. And then when Huddleston came on, I just don't understand.
I guess it's because Capello knows, sort of in the back of his mind, who is going to the World Cup. And then there's fringe players that, like the likes of Genas, Huddleston, that he wants to throw in and just see how they cope with it at that sort of level, in that sort of intensity against a team like Brazil. Perhaps that's the case. But then again, Carrick isn't a dead cert start, is he, by any means? So surely that would have been a good chance for him to stake a claim, and not just for England, but to sort of force his way back in for United as well. Well, and arguably the biggest game from the international break, guys, was the Republic of Ireland against France. Dov, you were a keen watcher of that game. John O'Shea and Patrice Evra both involved in terms of United players. O'Shea, he had Omri up against him. I thought he dealt really well with him, didn't he? And just what's your thoughts on the performances of both O'Shea and Evra? And do you think Ireland will make it?
Well, I'll go on Evra versus O'Shea first. And, well, John O'Shea showed his class and his ability. He was fantastic, solid at the back. So that dealt with Evra's runs well. And Omri, like you said. Evra, well, wasn't really the attacking threat that we know he is. He was quite subdued for a lot of the game. But I think I'd like Ireland to go through, let's put it that way. I'm not a big France fan. I don't particularly like Raymond Domenech. So I'd like Ireland to go through, but I don't think they will. They had their chances there. There are a couple of chances. I think it was Kevin Doyle, or no, it was Liam Lawrence, sorry. He had a chance. Evra, actually, it was a great tackle, managed to nick it away. It just deflected over past the post, which was a fantastic tackle. But I think Ireland had their chances, and France, like, they got their goal. So that's the sort of difference between these world-class sides. Like, even when they're not playing to their best, they can still win.
No, I totally agree. It's going to be tough, isn't it, for Ireland to go to the Stade de France and get a victory. But you never know. France, they're not too great at home, are they? They've had some shocking results in the past few years, especially under Raymond Domenech as well. So I'm not completely counting Ireland out just yet, but it's going to be really tough. Going to need a performance from the likes of Keane and Doyle if they are to get a result. But fingers crossed that they will. Let's briefly just run through some of the other results involving Manchester United players. Portugal beat Bosnia 1-0. That's a World Cup playoff as well. And Nani, obviously involved with Cristiano Ronaldo out. Nani's had to step up and be a bit of a pivotal player. And he certainly was, because he got the assist with a cross for Bruno Alves to nod home for the only goal of the game. So that's 1-0 Portugal going into the second leg in midweek. Northern Ireland, they played Serbia. So a meeting between two of our top centre-halves, Johnny Evans and Nemanja Vidic. Both of those players only played half a game. Obviously, no need to risk them any more than that. And more noticeably, Zoran Tosic, he played the full game for Serbia. And he actually, from what I've heard, he looked really, really bright. And he had a hand in the goal as well. He did a few step-overs and pulled the ball back, and Serbia scored from that. So good to see Tosic performing well. Elsewhere, Park Ji-sung and Darren Fletcher, they both captained their respective international sides. They didn't play each other, though. South Korea drew 0-0 with Denmark, while Scotland, Dov, you're probably fully aware of this, lost out 3-0 to Wales.
I was hoping you weren't going to remind me, but yes, absolute rubbish. Well, you're saying Darren Fletcher was made captain. He's actually been made the permanent captain of Scotland as well.
But, yeah, Craig Burley's just left.
Yeah, and the new medal was terrible. It's horrendous. It's embarrassing, actually. Yeah, I'm glad he's gone. We get somebody half decent, and maybe, I don't know, let's see.
Fletcher was poor, though, against Wales, I thought. I saw a bit of the game.
Everybody was poor, Dan. Everybody.
Yeah, but he did. You'd expect Fletcher there to, like, you know, properly take control of Ramsey. He took the mick out of him, and it was quite embarrassing, really. Ramsey's only 18, isn't he? And he played like that as well. They had no fear, and I thought he looked really good.
Moving on to briefly look at some of the under-21s that were involved. Tom Cleverley, he started for England in their victory over Portugal. Northern Ireland under-21s, they drew 1-1 with Germany. And you might be surprised to hear this, but there were four Manchester United youngsters, four involved for Northern Ireland under-21s. That's Craig Cathcart, Joe Dudgeon, Corey Evans and Oliver Norwood. Oliver Norwood in particular, fantastic performance. He grabbed the equaliser deep into stoppage time, and I've read it was a really decent effort as well, curling shot into the top corner. So to grab the point, that was a 1-1 draw in that one. So excellent stuff for United players involved, and that just about rounds up the international fixtures. Guys, have you got any news on, I believe, Dov, you checked out what Thomas Kuszak was up to?
Yeah, Thomas Kuszak, he played for Poland against Romania. Romania won 1-0. And he had a very good game. Apart from quite near the end, he had a bit of a hairy moment where he let the ball squirm under his belly for a shot. To be fair, for the goal, he had no chance, and he did make one fantastic save during the game as well. So it was a bit of a mixed bag for him in that game. It was good to see him getting a start, though, which is not bad.
And Dan, you tried to uncover whether Richie Delayet had played for Belgium, or indeed Belgium under-21s. I think he was called up to the senior side, but yeah, we've had a good look, haven't we? And we haven't been able to find anything, unfortunately.
So. Yeah, a fruitless search, so to speak, but I'm sure the wonders of the internet will come back one day and like help me out, but they've not done today. I know absolutely nothing about Belgian football. I don't know if you lot do. It's not one of my strong fortes.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, it's emails and Facebook time now. We did ask for you to send some questions over, and you've duly obliged, so thanks a lot for that. We'll start with, he's called himself Mr. Chutney on here. He wants to know, guys, whether we think the likes of older players like Maradona, George Best, Pele, the greats of the past, do you think they would have been able to cope in the modern game, in the Premier League, or perhaps the way the game has changed, would they have just been average players?
I think they'd be even better than what they were. Keeping it on a sort of United theme, if you look at some of the pitches that George Best played on and some of the challenges he had to put up with and some of the things he could do with a football were just phenomenal, even if you see them today. And imagine if he'd done that on a pristine pitch at Old Trafford, with the protection that forward players get from the referees and sort of the rule changes and things like that. And obviously the training methods, I think they would be even more revered than what they are now.
You know those memorable goals that Best scored, though, when players are just lunging in at him? The way he stays on his feet is amazing, but that wouldn't happen today anyway, because you'd get a free kick blown against you, so you wouldn't get the amazing goals, if you know what I mean. So I don't know how it'd work.
Yeah, they'd play advantage, though. Like, if he's still got the ball and running and doing what he's doing, the referee would just play advantage. Whereas, like, Ronaldo would roll about and cry until he got a free kick.
Maybe it's attitudes in the game that's changed, though. So it's not necessarily the players, because I think George Best, obviously, he'd still do a pretty decent job for us if he was in this sort of... Maybe. I think he'd be phenomenal, yeah. You can imagine the likes of, like, Bobby Charlton as well, like, spanking it from, like, 30 yards with a modern-day ball. Unbelievable. Keeper'd have no chance.
Excellent stuff. Well, our next Facebook questions come from Alan from Dublin. He's interested to know sort of with what happened with Nani and Sir Alex Ferguson recently. Obviously, Nani came out and sort of hinted that Sir Alex wasn't sort of managing him properly, and that's why we weren't getting good results from Nani. He's since come out and, well, in as many words, apologised for that and said that he didn't mean anything by it, any sort of malice towards Sir Alex Ferguson. But guys, what do you think about that one? Is Nani right to have come out and said that, or should he have kept his mouth shut and just concentrated on playing football? Personally, I think that's what he should have done.
I think that he had something to sort of say to the fans, because he must know that the fans are a bit on his back at the moment. Possibly not the best way to go about it, slagging off Fergie and making excuses. Cause let's be fair, he's had enough chances, really. When he started games, he's not really done much, which has been disappointing. But
what do you think he means, though, by the fact that he's saying that Ferguson's mismanaged me and things like that? What exactly is he alluding to, that he doesn't get enough games from the start? Because in fairness, he has had his fair share of football. It's just he hasn't produced results. Is it that Ferguson doesn't play him in the right position? Maybe he wants to be played just off the striker or something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, I think that a lot of the games he does, when he starts, he comes off, doesn't he, after, like, you know, 65, 70 minutes. And I think, you know, a lot of players can cause damage in the last, you know, 10, 15 minutes of games when the opposition's tiring. And, you know, now he's a fit lad. I'm sure he can skip past a few fullbacks at, you know, that stage of the game and have more influence on the game. No one likes getting taken off. I think it might be something to do with that. Obviously, I don't know the guy, so I wouldn't particularly know the right answer. But, I mean, that's what it seems like.
It was relating to the Chelsea game as well, that he wasn't even selected on the bench, and the fact that Obertan was picked. I can sort of understand that, in that Obertan's just sort of come on the scene. We mentioned it in the last week's pod, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oversand's come along and suddenly he's chucked straight in the side, but he has played well in the few opportunities he's been given, whereas Nani hasn't, so I don't see how he can argue with it.
Well, to be fair, like, if you look at what he said, he's not really said anything too crazy. He said Ferguson is a complicated man. Basically, says one minute he's praising you, the next minute he's like saying you're not doing this, you're not doing that, which is fair enough. And then it had to be mentioned about the sort of important games, and he says it shatters his confidence. Obviously, he's not really said he's getting mismanaged. He's just sort of telling people how he feels. And I think that sort of the media have maybe misconstrued what he said a bit.
Okay, that's fair enough. And Dov, I'll ask you. Alan's also asked what we feel about the rumours of David Villa. He's heard that a deal's already in place, actually, between United and Valencia, and that Villa could be about to come to Old Trafford, perhaps in January as well. What's your view on that?
Honestly, Steve, I don't think so. I know in the summer it was gutted he never got to move to Barcelona. Right? They'd sort of put in a bid for him. Valencia raised their price at the last minute. He wants to stay in Spain. He's 27 years old now. And then, like, if you look at our transfer policy, apparently we're only going to sign players that are under 26. He is one of the world's best strikers, and I think he'd be a great addition to the team. But I don't know how you'd fit him in. How are you going to play Berbatov, Rooney and David Villa? I don't see how it would work. And then obviously spending, like you say, quite a big bit of money on a player, which, I don't know, maybe we don't really need them. We've got, like, players like Makeda, Welbeck, Owen, Berbatov, Rooney. We've got enough attacking talent. Obviously, he can improve, but I don't see him coming here, to be honest. I think he wants to stay in Spain, so I don't really see him coming to England at all.
Well, our next Facebook message is from Safiyan Benzaye. He wants to know, Dov, you put a message on the Facebook group saying that you hoped Bosnia would beat Portugal. Is that purely because of the Ronaldo factor?
Oh, no. It's what's annoyed me is that FIFA decided to change their seeding policy at the end of qualifying to help the big teams get to the World Cup. So I don't want them to be there. I think it's just wrong and disgusting. And Bosnia, to be fair, they played really well in qualifying, and they were only unlucky because I think they were in the same group as Spain, and Portugal had been pretty dire in qualifying. So I think Bosnia have been the better team, so I want them to go through and get to the World Cup, and they've never been to a World Cup, and that's one of the things I like about seeing all these new teams.
Good to see Edin Dzeko on the world stage as well, and I agree with you about the seeding system. It's diabolical, isn't it, really? Like a team like Ireland battling to get second place, and then you end up with a tie against France.
Exactly. It shouldn't happen, Steve, at all. I hope both France and Portugal don't qualify for that reason. Sort of FIFA out a little bit.
Safian also asks another transfer-related question. Dan, he's talked about Gorku. He said that he played well against Ireland, and he did. He looked comfortable on the ball. A couple of nice little touches. Looks like he does want to try and do a bit too much now and again, though. So he's just asked whether he's the sort of attacking midfielder that we need at Old Trafford. I know we're lacking that creative spark in central midfield. So could Gorkouf plug the gap?
No, I disagree. I didn't think he had the best game. Me, I thought he was a bit... I expected a little bit more from him. He did like one little flick, didn't he, just outside the box that linked up with Gignac up front. No, I thought he was all right. His passing was decent, but I don't think he didn't put any incisive balls through, did he? But yeah, I mean, he's only young, so I'm sure he'll improve.
Would you make a bid January, the summer? What, 20, 30 million pounds probably that Bordeaux would be looking to get for him?
No, I wouldn't spend that much money on him, no. I thought Anelka really impressed me, actually. I'm not saying we should go out and buy him, but I thought he impressed me because he didn't play up front. He played kind of like behind the strikers and sort of a playmaker role, and I thought he played really well.
Okay, well, our final Facebook message comes from Jared Menezes. I hope I've pronounced that even slightly correctly. He wants to know our thoughts on New Zealand. They've obviously qualified for the World Cup. He's claimed that they're a rugby-crazy nation, which I'm sure we're all aware of, and it probably remain that way as well. So he wants to know, New Zealand qualifying for the World Cup, will that sort of push up the popularity of football in the country, or will it just be a case of, the World Cup comes around, you watch it for that period, and then it's back to, we're not really bothered about football?
I want to hear what Dan's got to say about New Zealand getting to the World Cup.
No, in terms of your question, Steve, I think that, you know, football is the third biggest sport in New Zealand, I think, after rugby and cricket. So I don't see it doing massive things, but it'll do the economy a world of good, I suppose, you know, having the national team at the World Cup. But I think it's a disgrace that New Zealand are even in the World Cup, to be quite honest with you. How they can get to the World Cup finals, I've no idea.
Because they're just one of the best teams in Oceania, their qualifying region.
Name the teams in Oceania, Dob. Come on.
Pacific Islands, Tonga, Fiji.
Fiji, they got beat by Fiji, right?
The Pacific Islands, American Samoa. I mean, it's not their nation. Fault where they're from.
Dan, it's World Cup, isn't it? It's a case of diversity and getting as many sort of cultural nations as you can involved in a World Cup. And I think it's great to see that there's a nation like New Zealand in there. Yeah, okay, they may end up being the whipping boys of the tournament, but at the end of the day, they've qualified for the World Cup in the Oceania group. And I know you're going to come out with the fact that the likes of Republic of Ireland are thinking we're having to play a playoff against France, yet New Zealand get a relatively easy qualifying group and then have a playoff against Bahrain to get through as well. But at the end of the day, Dan, they've qualified to be there, so you can't really have any arguments with it.
No, it's a fair play for them qualifying through they've been chosen to play against. But I mean, Australia, they're in Oceania, aren't they? I mean, why are they not in the Oceania group? It would make it a lot difficult. You know, FIFA want a lot of... They want to keep nice, don't they? It's all about the World Cup, like you say, Steve. Like, people around the world should be able to watch it. But for me, it's the best teams in the world playing against each other for a trophy, like it should be. New Zealand aren't going to get out of it. They're not. But I'll bet with you right now they won't score more than one goal in the three games.
All right. Right, Dan, what about in 1990 when Cameroon got to, was it the quarterfinals of the World Cup? When like nobody gave them a hope, and then like they beat Argentina. Did not beat England as well? So
the only way that anything like that's going to happen with New Zealand. I mean, come on, we watched New Zealand in the Confederations Cup and they got spanked by Spain. I mean, I know Spain are probably, you know, best team in the world and all that, but they're going to be playing against teams like of that nature in the World Cup. I just don't understand it. You know, players like, the best player they've got, arguably, is Ryan Nelson, who's, you know, an average centre-back at best. I just don't understand. It's a World Cup. You've got to be playing, you have the best players in the world playing.
Well, that's it, Dan. It's the World Cup, so you've got to have, like...
It's rubbish. It's the World Cup, right? Doesn't mean that every country in the world should have to, you know, join in the finals.
She don't get a chance to beat it.
What about upsets? I mean, you watch it for upsets. I mean, look at, Dov mentioned Cameroon. You've had the likes of Senegal. No one would have given them a chance. And
what about South Korea as well, Steve?
South Korea, exactly.
Yeah, but lads, right, what I'm saying is, right, that the game, South Korea, right, for one, Senegal, yeah, they've had to come through tougher qualifying groups than what New Zealand have. New Zealand have virtually got a pass into the World Cup.
They can't help
Bahrain for New Zealand is a tough game for New Zealand. You can't say that.
But New Zealand for Bahrain is a tough game. You could have tossed a coin and who's going to win that game. Come on, let's be honest. It's not. If you had Bahrain in the World Cup, I'd still be arguing the exact same point.
How are these nations meant to improve then, Dan, if you're not going to let them play against better sides at the World Cup to get that experience?
But teams like Wales, though, they're never going to get to a World Cup finals because they have to play top European teams every time they're going qualifying. Republic of Ireland, they had to play Italy. You know, you've got multiple nations that are never going to get there, no matter how hard they try. You know, whereas New Zealand and the Oceania League, if they have a good set of results, they're through without playing anyone of any substance. At least in the European qualifying, you've still got to play somebody top to deserve, you know, to earn your right to earn a playoff.
So what do you propose? You make a smaller World Cup and have it between
Wales and New Zealand and...
No, what I propose is that instead of having all this rubbish about having seeded, don't have it seeded. Don't have it seeded. All right, you stick to your own regional places because obviously flying to, I don't know, Asia for a World Cup game is probably not the best idea.
You know, yeah, but Dan, then you might not end up having some of the superpowers at the World Cup. You might miss out on the likes of Spain going to the World Cup, France going to the World Cup. What happens if a group of death was drawn and you had the likes of Netherlands?
You have to earn it, though. I'm on about earning your place at the World Cup.
Yeah, but what happens if all of these were in the same qualifying group? You wouldn't see some of the world's best players at the World Cup, and then you might even end up with having more average teams at the World Cup, and then you'd be moaning even more.
No, that's a good point. I won't be moaning at an average World Cup, but I just think that the fact that, like, you know, like Dov said it before about Republic of Ireland. I mean, they've drawn France, you know, when the rules get changed last minute just so we can have, you know, all the best teams, which is great. But how New Zealand are in there above some of the teams that aren't going to get there, that's what I'm arguing. Sweden, for one, you know, Dov's favourite player in the world, not going to be at the World Cup, right? if Ronaldo and et al. Don't go through against Bosnia, then you're going to lose some of the world's best players there. You know, Argentina nearly never made it through. It's just like, imagine if Argentina hadn't gone into the World Cup, right, and New Zealand were there. You'd feel a little bit of it's a bit irritating.
Dan, I don't want the big teams to get there if they don't deserve it. New Zealand
deserve it. Who are they playing against?
It's because they play in the Oceania Confederation, right? So it's like the European Confederation has all these top teams in it because of the way the game's developed in Europe. In Oceania, it's not as developed. Like, it's behind rugby and cricket and pretty much all the countries round about there. So, I mean, the only way that they can sort of increase exposure is to go to the biggest sporting occasion in the world, ever.
Exposure. What's exposure going to do? It's not going to make
It gets younger players interested in the game who then want to play the game, who then become
In 20 years, New Zealand will be champions. It's never going to happen, is it?
Why
I'm not bothered about exposure. Dov, right. Dov, seriously. Let's not be daft, right?
If they all you need is 20 players, if you can get 20 world-class players, they could win the World Cup.
Scotland can't even make a World Cup. You're asking New Zealand to go and win it in 20 years' time.
Things have happened.
To be fair, you never know. You look at like the under 20 World Cup this recently happened. Am I right in thinking that was it Ghana that won it, or they were definitely
Ghana won it? Yep, right.
Ghana for the last six, 7 years, they've been up and coming nation anyway. They're already an up and coming nation. In the last World Cup, they played well. They were unlucky not to go through. This World Cup, I think Ghana are going to be quite tough, and the African nations as well. You know,
there is a lot.
Yeah, but there is a lot. What you don't understand is the fact that I'm saying, like, teams like Ghana's a perfect example. They're playing against top class African nations, like, you know, the Ivory Coast, Senegal, like you say. Wait,
Malawi. Malawi are rubbish.
Oh,
Togo. I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, what I'm saying is top class, right? You're missing.
Yeah, but Dan, you can't help it if that's just the continent that you're in, and you can't expect like New Zealand to have to travel to play a European team just so it equals it out in qualifying.
In the Asian qualifying, like Australia,
right, Dan,
right?
I'll let you know that was basically done because Australia were just basically, they had a monopoly on the Oceania, like, qualifying. Basically, they were winning it every time, like, beating teams.
Now, somebody else has got a monopoly. What happens when New Zealand start winning it every year?
No, but that's the thing. They've not got as much of a monopoly. It's that it's more, it's even. So that's just it. So it's more competitive. So you're getting a team that's all
move
around. Relative.
Move the continents around. That's what we should do. That's what we should do. <then. laughs> just because somebody else. So, if, you know,
I think we should wrap that up. But I'll tell you what I want. I want people to email in. I want people to email in at podcast@redcafe.net, and I want to see what they think and see what side of the defence.
I don't mind having a debate. It's not a problem. But I mean, I just think that, you know, the World Cup for me, it's players who play in the conference, like, they're not even worthy of the conference after New Zealand players, don't deserve to play on the World Cup stage. I'm sorry, they just don't. It's ridiculous.
Dan said his bit. So yeah, get your email sent, podcast@redcafe.net. Let's move swiftly on because we've still got quite a lot to get through. The emails we received first from Damian Miller, a regular contributor on Facebook and through the emails as well. Well, without harking on too much about it, Foster and Kuchak, we've discussed it many times in the past. That situation, he likens it to the situation of Roy Carroll and Tim Howard when they were at the club, and he felt that both were simply just not good enough. I mean, I'd sort of argue the case now that Tim Howard probably would do all right at the moment because he really has come on leaps and bounds at Everton. But, Dov, I'll direct this one to you. Damien's asked about Jussi Jaskalainen. Obviously a fantastic keeper, one of the best in the league, Bolton Wanderers. Would you be tempted to bring him in? I mean, he thinks that he could be the sort of ideal replacement for Edwin van der Sar.
I think he'd be more. He is a good keeper, and I do quite rate him. Like, some of the saves he makes are fantastic. I think he'd be more as a stopgap, as in between Van der Sar and whoever's next, if that makes sense. Like, we've been linked with a lot with Akinfeev, somebody like that. So I think maybe it'd be bring Jaskalainen in for a season or two, and then get Akinfeev in. That's the only really way I could see him coming to the club, to be honest.
That's right. If you think Ben Foster's you know, bad at kicking, you should see Jaskalainen. He is awful. You know, he really is. It's not a laughing matter. He's awful, literally. I've been to Reebok a lot of times where, you know, before the game, you see the goalkeeper coach on the halfway line and Jaskalainen kicking it, right? The amount of times it goes just out of touch for no reason. I don't understand. He's awful at kicking. Good shot stopper, but no. Not, it's not United class. That's a daft. That's daft. That's ridiculous.
Well, Dan, I'll direct the next email to you. It's Mark Bennett. He wants to know about Wayne Rooney, why he's never been discussed as a central midfielder with all his work rate, tenacity, endeavour. Why do we never consider him as a central midfielder? And obviously with the problems we've discussed there that we've got in central midfield, why has he never been tried?
I don't know. I think he's got all the qualities to play in midfield. But I think he's more dangerous when he's slightly further forward, really. I think it'd be a bit of a waste in midfield. I know he would track back and he'd put his tackles in, he'd do all the hard work, and he'd probably got a killer pass on him as well. But I just think that I'd rather him be an outlet for us and have somebody else pass Rooney the ball rather than the other way around. Unless somebody, you know, amazing came along that was better than Rooney that we could put up front, but I can't see that happening anytime soon. But no, I think I don't see any reason why he can't. Obviously, he's got the talent to play there, but I think I prefer him further forward. People have said that in the past, though. Maybe once, you know, Scholes retires, drop Rooney a little bit deeper and do what Scholes used to, you know, arrive late into the box with a playmaker. I could see it happening, but I just think I'd prefer him rather up top.
Okay, well, Sean Fields emailed in and asked us to discuss the Republic of Ireland game against France, and we've pretty much done that earlier on in the show. And Stuart McKenzie, Dov, he wants to know what we feel about, well, Ben Foster and his recent comments about being sort of disheartened with life at Old Trafford. And he asks, well, surely it should be chance for Thomas Kuchak.
Hey, I think I'm in agreement with Stuart there. I think Kuchak should get a chance. Foster had his chance. he screwed it up. So I think Kuchak should get a little run in the team and see if he can screw it up as well, which I think he probably will. In my opinion, we're going to have a new keeper in the summer. Don't know who it is yet, but I think we're going to have somebody else in. I think I can see where Foster's coming from. Obviously, he's like first choice for his country, but third choice at United. So it's be frustrating for him.
Kuchak, though, he's been on the bench, I think, the last few games for United. I don't think Foster's been on the bench.
That's one of Foster's main gripes, that he's sort of like third choice at the moment for United, and yet he's starting for England. So he's sort of a bit disheartened with the way things are going. And he's openly admitted that he's made mistakes, and he's also admitted that he knows he's got no chance of sort of ousting Edwin van der Sar, because he is one of the best in the world. So, but Dov, your point there, I mean, who would you bring in? You've been linked with the likes of, what, Igor Akinfeev, Manuel Neuer as well, the German keeper. I mean, would it be between one of them two?
Well, I quite like Akinfeev, to be honest. Every time I've seen him, he just looks like a quality shot stopper. It looks like he can command the box as well, command his area. And he's quite young, which means, obviously, like, you can get him there for maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years and sort of have him like sort of lead the defence in a way. Neuer, I watched him in the under-21 European Championships, and he looked a bit shaky at points. Good shot stopper, but a bit flappy when it comes to crosses. So I wouldn't be too keen on him. But
Do you not think Akinfeev is a bit small?
If he stops the ball going in the back of the net, I don't care what he is.
No, but I'm just thinking, if he plays in England all the time, you know, if he came to United, obviously a lot of balls go into the box. Would he struggle aerially against the more powerful teams, you know, like the more built teams like Blackburn?
How tall's Rayner? I've always got the impression that he's on the short side. I'm not exactly sure how tall he is, do you know?
No, it's a good point. Rayner's a bit more built, though, isn't he? He's more sort of sturdy rather than Akinfeev. He's quite... he's just a small keeper generally. I mean, I'm sure he can jump very well, but whether he can challenge, whether he's got the confidence to, you know, come out and command his area like Dov said, I don't know. I've not seen a great deal of him.
Well, Rayner's 6'2" and Akinfeev's 6'1", so they're not that small.
Well, no, I know they're not small, but in terms of goalkeepers, I mean, like you say, Van der Sar, he's a pretty big lad.
I don't know.
He's a tall lad, so.
They're both over 6 foot, so I didn't think it'd be a problem with them, to be fair. Unless you're playing somebody like Peter Crouch, who's just huge.
And just finally on the emails, we received a message from Manchester United Brazilian Supporters Club, and they put together a rendition of Glory Glory Man United on the guitar. It really is a fantastic listen. So what we're going to do, we're going to play you a 30-second snippet now, just to give you an idea of what it's all about. But if you do want to see the full version, there's a YouTube link which we're going to post on the Facebook group, so do make sure you keep an eye out for that. And here's the 30-second snippet.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, everybody, it is preview time, and at the weekend, we are facing Everton at Old Trafford, and we're delighted to welcome Bill from ToffeeTalk.com. He is an Everton fan, and he's going to let us know a bit about Everton and what we're likely to be facing at the weekend. So, hi, Bill. Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Thanks for inviting me.
Not a problem at all. Well, we should get right into it. Obviously, we're playing Everton. Well, United are playing Everton at the weekend. How do you think the game's going to go? How do you rate your chances coming to Old Trafford?
Now it can only go one way, really, can't it? We haven't got the strength in depth, and we've got too many players missing. I just hope they take a bit of pity on us. We've had one 6-1 thrashing from Arsenal. We don't want another one from you.
And what about, obviously, we're in pretty rubbish form. Is that not lifting your spirits up a little bit as well?
No, not at all. Far superior to our team. Even though you're missing some, you've got players that can go in and fill the void, but we haven't got that, unfortunately, so we're struggling.
Say you had to pick one Everton player that's fit. Who do you think is going to be the biggest thorn in our side? Although you said they're not going to be many, but who do you think will be the biggest threat to us?
Well, a month or 2 months ago, I would have said Cahill, but even he's gone off the boils and he hasn't scored for God knows how long. Who is there? We haven't got anybody, to be honest. If Saha plays, he might sneak a goal somewhere, but yeah, we haven't got anybody that could possibly put any give you any problems.
I quite like this. I think this is going to be a good game on Saturday.
It's going to be a good one for you.
You mentioned Saha there, Bill. I mean, he'll want to prove a point. When he's coming back to Old Trafford, sort of show Ferguson that he should have kept faith in him, because when he isn't injured, he really is a terrific player.
He is, yeah, without a doubt. I think he's got 7 goals now in 9. The trouble is, he plays once, and then he rests them, or he's injured for 3 more, you know.
Mm.
So he comes and goes for the odd game, but when he comes, he scores.
That's what we found about him as well. That's where we got rid of him.
Yeah, well, you can afford to. We can't.
So we'll go back to United. Obviously, you said about Everton's lack of strength and depth there. If there's one United player you could have on the Everton side, money's no object, who would you take to Goodison Park?
That goes without saying, really. The fella you bought off us. It'd have to be Wayne Rooney. I don't like him as a person, but as a footballer, he's one of the best, isn't he?
He's a fantastic player. I was going to ask you about him as well, obviously. What are your sort of feelings about him? Like, what's the general perception of Everton fans towards Wayne?
Well, I think it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to go at some time or other. I mean, he was obviously too good for us. We couldn't sort of fulfil his ambitions, which, OK, we can understand. We've done the same with Leicester. We'd have to let him go, but we understand that. But Rooney, like, he scores a goal for us, comes waving his shirt in the air with the... Once a blue, always a blue on the front of his shirt. 2 weeks later, he's kissing the United badge, you know.
Maybe he's seen sense, Bill, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's seen a big wage packet, let's put it that way.
So, not well liked.
I think the way he went, you see, was the problem. We all knew he was going to go sometime or other. But the way he went and then lied about it, saying he was pushed out. He even had to settle out of court, didn't he, with David Moyes, because Moyes sued him.
Yeah, that's
true. So I think he wanted to go. He's had his head turned, and that was it. He wanted to go, and that was it. So, yeah, we tried to get as much money as we could out of him, but I think it was cheap.
I think it was cheap. No, it's not too bad. I could be doing with £30 million, to be honest. I mean, not bad. Staying on the sort of Everton to United sort of transfer trail, Jack Rodwell recently been linked to us. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about him and sort of what sort of brings to the team and what kind of player he is?
Well, Rodwell's going to be a star. He's going to be an England captain. There's no doubt about that. He's captained every England team he's played for. He played for the under-18s when he was 15. He's played for the under-21s when he's 17. And the lad's clever. The lad's good. He's so cool. And he has everything about him. Two-footed. He's a super player. No doubt about that. And he'll have to go. We can't keep him.
Like, where's his best position? Because I believe he plays, centre mid, and so he can play centre back as well.
Well, he plays centre back for England under 21s, but he's never played centre back for us. He's always played in the middle of the park. But now you see, because we haven't had Neville all season, so he's doing the job that Neville does. But if Neville comes back, I think they'll rest him because he's. At the moment, he's struggling. We've got no good players around him, and he's struggling, actually. He's only 18-year-old, after all.
And how long do you think you'll manage to keep him for? Do you think you'll be going quite soon?
Probably the summer, I think. If he continues playing and, you know, he's in the limelight, like he will be, probably, if he carries on playing, probably be summer by the time it's over.
Well, if it sounds quite good, I'd maybe welcome him to Old Trafford. Don't know if you'd like that, Bill, but before we let you go, I get a prediction off you. I'm guessing it won't be a good one for Everton, but what do you think the score will be at the weekend?
Oh, it's got to be 3 or 4-1 to you, I should think. We're not playing well at all. We can't even put up a fight these days. They just sort of roll over and that's it.
I'm going to keep going. I've got one more before I let you go. What do you think the reason is for Everton? Sort of like they've been quite lacklustre this season. Do you think it's just their like squad depth, or do you think there's something else there?
Well, it's the influential players that we haven't got. You see, the players that can influence the game. I mean, Yakubu, I mean, even Neville, I mean, he might have been for you and you got rid of him, but he's been brilliant for us. There's no doubt about that. He's been a good buy. So Neville, Arteta, Yakubu, P&R, we're missing them all, you see. They can do things, but we haven't got them.
There you go, from an Everton fan. Well, but it's been great having you on the show, and some good insights there into the world of Everton. And, well, some good omens for the weekend for us at least. But it was great having you on, and a pleasure indeed.
Yeah, no problem, mate. Thanks.
Well, that was Bill from TofferyTalk.com. That's the place for the thinking Evertonian. So if you want to go and check that out, if you want to maybe think a little, I don't know. But yeah, so boys, what do we think about the game? Everton coming to Old Trafford, easy win. Do you think? Do you agree with Bill? Do you think it'll be quite easy for us?
Oh, I don't know about easy win. I know we played really well at Chelsea, but at the end of the day, it's a defeat. The game before that was the CSKA Moscow draw 3-3. So we're not in a great sort of run of form at the minute. And well, we all saw what happened with Sunderland, and that was a game we predicted we'd sort of wipe the floor with. And arguably, Everton have got a stronger side than Sunderland, so I think it's going to be a tough game. Like to Cahill, Fellaini, Sahar, if he plays. They're all match winners, aren't they? So, yeah, I still think we'll win. We should have too much for them. But, yes, yeah, it's going to be tight. I think it'll be maybe 1-0, 2-1.
I think we'll stroll to success, victory, really. I think 3-0. Like the Everton fan said, you know, they're not playing very well at the moment. They got tonked by Benfica. They've been hammered by Arsenal as well. I think they drew another... Maybe not like a 5 or 6 route, but I think we'll comfortably win. I know that's very confident, but I just think that we need to start games. I think it's the perfect time to start doing it, really. I disagree with you, Steve, about Sunderland and Everton having a better team. I think Sunderland are a decent outfit. And they've got pace and power up front.
I don't disagree that Sunderland aren't a decent outfit, but I just think on paper, you look at that Everton side, and I just think that they're a stronger side on paper. Yeah, on their day, Sunderland can beat anyone. But
yeah, no, I agree with that part. I just think that with Everton, especially, I mean, we've just got to watch out for set pieces, I think, really. Obviously, like you say, they've got Distan, they've got Fellaini and Cahill, who are all good at, you know, headers. So I think we've got something to look out for there. But I think football-wise, we should, as long as we're patient, and if it's 0-0 after, you know, 60 minutes, not to rush things, then I think we'll be all right.
What do you make of... is it Billy Aledinov? His 2 goals.
Yeah, Billy.
Russia.
Yeah.
he looks like
a decent player.
He's a decent... well, I'm not pronouncing his name regularly, so there you go. He's a decent player, isn't he? Yeah, he looks pretty lively, but I can't imagine him having a decent game against us, though.
Rodwell as well. I mean, we mentioned to Bill just before about the rumours linking him to United. I mean, he'll be out to make an impression. I don't know if he'll start. I presume he's been playing quite regularly, so you'd expect him to get the nod, and he'll want to impress, won't he?
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing Jack Rodwell. I think he's a decent prospect for the future. I'd like to see him a little bit more closely, see if he would be a potential player for United.
And Dov, just finally, what would be your prediction for the game?
Well, I think I'm going to agree with Dan a little bit. I think there's going to be a backlash following the Chelsea game, and I think we're going to put maybe 3 past Tim Howard. So I'm going to go with a 3-0, I think.
Fantastic stuff. Well, that is just about it for this week on the redcafe.net podcast. As always, feedback, questions and comments, podcast@redcafe.net. Alternatively, do what some of our listeners have done from last week, and that's send us a message on Facebook or get involved in the Facebook group too. Yeah, that just leaves me to say thanks a lot for listening, and tune in for episode 16 next week.